So my voice was calm, level, as I said, I think I'll pass, actually. All righty, he said, hardly bothered. And then I was walking back to my car. End of subject and conversation. But all righty? What was that? Once behind the wheel, the door shut behind me, I looked back at him, already thinking of a dozen other better ways I could have handled this conversation. I cranked my engine, then backed out of my space. The last thing I saw before turning around was Eli, right where I'd left him, still looking up at the jumps. His head was cocked slightly to the side, as if he was thinking hard, the jumpers rising up in front of him. From this distance, you couldn't tell them apart, distinguish their various styles or approaches. They were all the same, moving in a steady line, up, down, in view for only a moment, then gone again. Chapter 7. When it came to Thisbe, Heidi worried about everything. How much she slept, whether she ate enough, whether she ate too much, what that red spot on her leg was. Ringworm? Eczema? The mark of the devil? If it hurt her to cry so much, her hair was going to fall out, her poops were the right color. And now she was going to give the kid an identity crisis. My goodness! I heard her saying one day when I came down for my coffee around 4 p.m. She and Thisbe were in the living room, having tummy time, which she did religiously, as it was supposed to keep the baby from having a flat head, on the floor. Look at how strong you are! Initially, I was too focused on getting my caffeine levels up to pay attention to them. Also, I'd kind of mastered tuning Heidi out, if only out of necessity. But after I'd had a half a cup, I began to notice something was amiss. Caroline, she was saying in a sing-song voice, drawing out each syllable. Who's my pretty Caroline girl? I filled my cup up again, then walked into the living room. She was leaning over the baby, who was on her stomach, struggling to hold up that big, possibly flat head. Caroline, she said, tickling the baby's back. Miss Pretty Caroline West. I thought her name was Thisbe, I said. Heidi jumped, startled, then looked up at me. Auden, she stammered. I didn't hear you come in. I looked at her, then at the baby, then back at her again. I was actually just passing through, I told her, and turned to go. I thought I was safe, but then, just as I reached the stairs, she spoke. I don't like the name. When I turned back, she looked up at the ceiling, her face flushed, like someone else had said this. Then she sighed, sitting back on her heels. I don't, she said slowly, more quietly. I wanted to name her Isabel. It's the name of one of my best friends here in Colby, and I'd always loved it. Hearing this, I looked longingly up the stairs in the direction of my dad's office, wishing, as I always did, that he was here to deal with this instead of me. But lately, he'd been even more immersed in his book, the apples piling up uneaten. So, I said to Heidi, walking back over to her, why didn't you? She bit her lip, smoothing her hand over the baby's back. Your father wanted her to have a literary name, she said. He said Isabel was too pedestrian, common. That with it, she'd never have a chance at greatness. But I worry Thisbe is just too unusual, Too exotic. It's got to be hard to have a name hardly anyone's ever heard of, don't you think? Well, I said, not necessarily. Her mouth dropped open. Oh, Auden, I wasn't saying that yours... I know, I said, holding up my hand to fend off this apology, which would likely have gone on for ages. I'm just saying, from experience, it hasn't really been a hindrance. That's all. She nodded, then looked back down at Thisbe. Well, she said, I guess that is good to know. But if you don't like it, I told her, just call her Caroline. I mean... Who's being called Caroline? I jumped, turning to see my dad, standing at the bottom of the stairs. Clearly, I was not the only one creeping around. Oh, I said, I was just saying it's the baby's middle name. Middle name, he repeated, and only because her mother insisted. I wanted to name her Thisbe Andromeda. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Heidi wince. Really? I said. It's powerful, he replied, pounding his chest for emphasis. Memorable. And it can't be shortened or cutified, which is how a name should be. If you were an Ashley or a Lisa and not an Auden, do you think you'd be so special? I wasn't sure how I was supposed to answer this. Did he actually expect me to agree that it was his choice of name and not all my hard work that had gotten me where I was? Luckily, it seemed to be a rhetorical question, as he was already en route to the fridge, where he pulled out a beer. I think, Heidi said, glancing at me, that while names are important, it's the person who really defines themselves. So if Thisbe is a Thisbe, that's great. But if she wants to be a Caroline, then she has that option.
She is not, my dad said, popping his beer, going to be a Caroline.
I just looked at him, trying to figure out when exactly he'd gotten so pompous and impossible. He couldn't have been like this my entire life. I would have remembered it, wouldn't I? You know, Heidi said quickly, scooping the baby up and coming into the kitchen, I don't even know your middle name, Auden. What is it? I kept my eyes on my dad steadily as I said, Penelope.
See?
Said my dad to her, as if this proved something.
Strong, literary, unique.
Embarrassing, I thought. Too long, pretentious. That's lovely, Heidi said, too enthusiastically. I had no idea. I didn't say anything. Instead, just downed the rest of my coffee and put the cup in the sink. I could feel Heidi watching me, though, even as my dad headed out onto the front deck with his beer. I heard her take in a breath, about to say something, but luckily then my dad was calling her, asking what she wanted to do for dinner. Oh, I don't know, she said, glancing at me as she put Thisbe in her bouncy seat, which was on the kitchen table. She fastened her in, then shot me an apologetic look as she stepped outside to join him. What are you in the mood for? I stood there for a moment, watching them stand together, looking out at the water. My dad was drinking his beer, and as Heidi talked, he looped his arm around her waist, pulling her closer to him, and she rested her head on his shoulder. You just couldn't even begin to understand how some things worked. Or so I was learning. On the counter, the baby made a gurgling noise, waving her arms around, and I walked over, looking down at her.
She couldn't look you in the eye yet. Instead, her gaze always found the center of your forehead. Maybe she would be a Thisbe after all. I never even consider Caroline. But it was the thought of my dad's face, so sure, as he stated otherwise, that made me lean in close to her ear and christen her anew. Part her given name, part the one Heidi had wanted. But all mine. "Hey, Isby," I whispered. "Aren't you a pretty Isby girl?" There's something about living at the beach in the summer. You get so used to the sun and sand that it gets hard to remember what the rest of the world and the year is like. When I opened the front door to an outright downpour a couple of days later, I just stood there for a moment, realizing that I'd forgotten all about rainy days. Since I had no rain jacket, I had to borrow one from Heidi, who offered me three colors: bright pink, light pink, and, in her words, dusky pink, whatever that meant. I picked the light one, yet still felt positively radioactive as I walked down the gray, wet sidewalk, boldly contrasting with everything around me. At Clementine's, Maggie was behind the counter in a miniskirt, flip-flops, and a worn T-shirt that said Clyde's Rides on it. Bicycle wheels in both the D's. She was bent over a magazine, most likely her beloved Holly World, and gave me a sleepy wave as I approached. "Still coming down out there, huh?" she said, reaching into the register to hand me the day's receipts. "Yep," I replied. "Any shipments?" "Not yet." I nodded, and then she went back to her reading, turning a page. While Esther and Leah sometimes attempted more conversation with me, Maggie always kept it to a minimum, which I actually appreciated. It wasn't like we needed to pretend we were friends or had anything in common other than our employer. And while I had to admit to still being somewhat surprised by what I'd seen her do at the jump park, otherwise I figured I pretty much had her pegged. I knew she probably felt that exact same way about me. I went to the office, which for some reason was freezing, so I kept Heidi's jacket on as I got settled, pulling out the checkbook and finding my calculator. For the next hour or so, the store was pretty dead, aside from a couple of groups of girls coming in to pick through the clearance rack and moon over the shoes. Occasionally, I'd hear Maggie's phone beep as a text message came in, but otherwise it was pretty quiet. Then at around 6, the door chimed. "Hi there," I heard Maggie say. "Can I help you find anything?" There was a pause, and I wondered if the person had heard her. Then, though, came the voice I knew better than just about any other. "Oh, dear God, no," my mother said, and I could hear the shudder in her tone. "I'm just looking for my daughter." "You're Auden's mom?" Maggie said. "That's great. She's in back. I'm sure she..." I sat bolt upright, then pushed my chair back and scrambled to the door. Even though I got out to the floor as fast as I could, it wasn't quick enough. I found my mother dressed in her customary all-black, dress, sweater over it, hair piled on her head, by the makeup display. She was holding a glass bottle at arm's length. Her eyes narrowed as she examined the printed label. "Booty berry," she read slowly, enunciating each word. Then she looked over her glasses at Maggie. "And this is..." "Perfume," Maggie told her. Then she smiled at me. "Or actually, body spritzette. It's like perfume, but lighter and longer lasting for everyday use." "Of course," my mother said, her voice flat. She replaced the bottle, then took a long look around the store, her displeasure more than evident. When she finally got to me, she didn't look any happier.
Well, there you are.
Hi, I said. She was studying me with such seriousness that I was instantly nervous. Then even more so when I remembered the pink jacket I had on. When did you decide to come down? My mother sighed, turning past Maggie, who was now smiling at her for some reason, to the bathing suits, which she surveyed with an expression one might reserve for observing some sort of tragedy. This morning, she said, shaking her head as she reached out to touch an orange bottom trimmed with ruffles. I was desperate for an escape, but I seemed to have brought foul mood and weather with me.
Oh, don't worry about that, Maggie said. The rain's supposed to taper off tonight. Tomorrow will be gorgeous. Perfect beach weather. You'll get that suntan yet.
My mom turned back to look at her as if she were speaking in tongues. Well, she said, in such a way I knew she was holding back everything she was actually thinking. Won't that be nice?
Have you eaten? I asked her, too eagerly. I took a breath, then said more calmly, There's a really good place just a bit down the boardwalk. I can probably take off for an hour or so.
Of course you can, Maggie said. You should totally hang out with your mom. The books can wait. My mom eyed Maggie again, as if doubting she could recognize a book, much less read one.
I could use a drink at any rate, she said, taking another look around the store before starting for the door. Even her stride was disapproving. Lead the way.
I glanced at Maggie, who was watching her, fascinated. I'll be back in a little bit, okay?
Take your time, she said. Really, I'm fine here alone.
My mother snorted softly, hearing this, and then, thankfully, we were out the door, back into the rain. As soon as it swung shut behind us, she said,
Oh, Auden, it's even worse than I expected.
I felt my face flush, although I wasn't surprised she was so up front.
I needed a rain jacket, I said. I wouldn't normally...
I mean, she continued, I knew any business Heidi owned would probably not be to my sensibilities. But Booty Berry? And what about those Lolita-esque swimming bottoms? Are we packaging women to look like little girls now? Or little girls to look even more so in order to exploit their innocence? How can she be a woman, not to mention a mother, and condone this sort of thing?
Hearing this, I relaxed, as my mother's rants were as familiar to me as nursery rhymes.
Well, I said, the fact is, she knows her market. That stuff really sells.
Of course it does, but that doesn't make it right.
My mother sighed, opening her umbrella and raising it over her head, then offering me her arm, which I took, stepping beneath it with her.
And all that pink, it's like a giant vagina in there.
I stifled a laugh, covering my mouth with my hand.
But I guess that's the point, she said, sighing. It's just so bothersome because it's the most shallow, base depiction of the female experience. Sugar and spice and everything nice, peddling packaging, not substance.
We were at the last chance now, where for once there was no line. This is the place, I said, nodding at it. The onion rings are to die for. My mother peered in the door. Oh, no, no. I'll require at least tablecloths and a wine list. Let's keep looking.
We ended up back at the hotel where she was staying, a small boutique place called the Condor, just off the boardwalk. Its restaurant was tiny, crowded with only a few tables, and dim. Heavy red curtains hanging from the windows, the carpet a matching shade. My mother settled into a booth, nodded her approval at the flickering candle on the table, and ordered a glass of Cabernet from the hostess as she shed her sweater. After a pointed look, I took off Heidi's jacket, stuffing it under my bag, out of sight.
So, she said, once her wine had arrived and she'd taken a big gulp. Tell me about your father's book. He must be done by now, ready to send it off to his agent. Has he let you read it?
I looked down at my water glass, moving it in a circle on the table. Not yet, I said carefully, as I knew she was looking for more than just the answer to this question. He's working day and night, though.
Sounds more like writing than revising, she observed, picking up the menu and scanning it before setting it aside.
I didn't say anything.
But then, your father did always have odd work habits. Writing never came easily for him, as it does for some others.
Right, I thought. Time for a subject change. The baby's pretty cute, I said. She still cries a lot, though. Heidi thinks she has colic.
If you think a baby has colic, it probably doesn't, my mother said, taking another sip of her wine. You know, with Hollis, there was no question. From the first night home, he screamed his lungs out. It lasted for 3 months.
I nodded. Well, Thisby's pretty fussy.
Thisby. My mother shook her head. I still cannot believe that name. Your father and his delusions of grandeur. What's the middle name? Persephone? Beatrice?
Caroline.
Really? I nodded. How quaint. And unlike him.
Heidi fought for it, apparently.
She should have fought harder, my mom said. It's only a middle name, after all.
The waiter came by then, asking if we wanted appetizers. As my mother picked up the menu again, ordering us some scallop ceviche and a cheese plate, I looked down at Heidi's jacket, the pink now barely visible against the dark red of the booth all around it. I had a flash of her face the day we'd been discussing names, how she'd rushed to compliment my own cumbersome middle name, just because she assumed it would make me feel better.
Then again, my mom said, as the waiter left, I doubt your father picked Heidi for her fortitude. Quite the opposite, in fact. I think all he really wanted was someone fluffy and insubstantial, so that he could be absolutely sure she'd always follow his lead.
I knew that she was probably right. After all, it wasn't like Heidi had showed any great backbone in the last few weeks. And yet, somehow I heard myself say, Heidi's not completely ditzy, though.
No.
I shook my head. She's actually a pretty sharp businesswoman. She turned to face me, her dark eyes meeting mine.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I know because I'm doing her books.
I'd forgotten how penetrating my mother's looks could be, and I broke quickly, turning my attention back to my water glass.
Clementine's could be just a seasonal business, but somehow she's managing to turn a monthly profit all year long. And she's really savvy when it comes to catching trends. A lot of the stuff she ordered last year at this time went on to be huge.
I see, she said slowly. Like Booty Berry, for instance. I flushed. Why was I even defending Heidi anyway? I'm just saying, I said. She's not just what she appears.
No one is,
she said. Once again, managing to both have the last word and make it seem like she'd been right all along. How she always did that, I had no idea. But enough about Heidi. Let's talk about you. How's the reading going for next year? You must be getting a lot done.
I am, I said. It's slow going, though. The textbooks are pretty dry, especially the econ stuff, but I think...
Auden, you can't expect any subject to simplify itself for you, she said. Nor should you want it to. A challenge only means you'll retain the information that much better.
I know, I replied. It's just kind of hard doing the reading without any direction from a professor. I think once I'm in the class, it'll be easier to know what's important.
She shook her head. But you shouldn't need that. Too often I have students who are happy to just wait for me to explain to them what a line of dialogue or stage direction means within the context of the play. They don't even think to try to figure it out themselves. But in Shakespeare's time, you had only the text. It's up to you to decipher the meaning. It's the only pure way to learn.
She was getting fired up, clearly, which was probably why it was a mistake to say,
"But this is economics, not literature. It's different." Now she really zeroed in on me, narrowing her gaze.
"No, Auden, it's not. That's exactly my point. When have I ever taught you to take another person's view on anything?"
I just sat there, this time knowing better than to answer. Thankfully, then our food arrived, and she got this last word as well. Things didn't really improve from there. She gave up on me as a source of conversation, instead ordering another glass of wine before launching into a long, protracted story about some curriculum dispute that was apparently draining all her time and energy. I half listened, making affirming noises when necessary, and picked at my salad and pasta. By the time we were done, it was past 8, and when we stepped back outside, the rain had stopped, and the sky was now streaked with pink.
"Well, look at that," my mother said, taking it in. "It's your favorite color."
I felt this like a sudden slap, which was exactly how it was intended. "I don't like pink," I said, my voice as stiff as I felt. She smiled at me, then reached over, ruffling my hair.
"Methinks you doth protest too much," she said. "And your choice of outerwear says otherwise."
I looked down at Heidi's jacket.
"This isn't mine. I told you that."
"Oh, Auden, relax. I'm just kidding."
She took a deep breath, then let it out, closing her eyes.
"And besides, maybe it's to be expected that you'd change a bit down here with Heidi and these people. I suppose I couldn't expect to keep you as my very own doppelganger forever. Eventually you'd want to try the Booty Berry, so to speak."
"I don't," I said, and now I could hear the edge in my voice. She did too, her eyes widening, but just slightly. "I mean, I'm not. I just work there. That's all."
"Honey, it's fine," she said, ruffling my hair again.
But this time I stepped out of her reach, hating her condescension, the way she smiled, shrugging.
"We all have our dirty little secrets, don't we?"
It was only pure chance and nothing else that led me at this exact moment to look over the fence behind us to the hotel pool, which was deserted, save for one person. One person in black, square-framed glasses. His skin pale enough to be translucent, wearing red trunks and reading a small, hardback book that you knew at one glance was literature. I glanced at my mother, catching her eye, then turned back to him, making sure her gaze followed mine. When it did, I said, "I guess we do." She tried to keep her face relaxed, but there was one quick twitch as this remark hit home. But I didn't feel good about it. I didn't feel anything. "Well," she said after a moment, "I'm sure you need to get back to your job." She said these last two words the same way she referred to my dad's book, making it clear that she doubted it mattered, or even existed. She leaned closer, offering me her cheek to kiss. But I stayed where I was. She smiled at me again, then said, "Oh, darling, don't be bitter. It's the first instinct of the week." I bit my lip, turning away from her, and didn't respond to this. Instead, I dug my hands deep into Heidi's jacket, as if to tear the pink right off it, as I walked away. Someone else might have called after me, but I knew my mother wouldn't. She'd gotten her last word, and it was a good one, and to her, that was all that mattered. On the way back to Clementine's, I kept my head down, trying to swallow over the thick lump that had appeared in my throat. Clearly, it was my defending Heidi that had set her off, even though I'd only said that she wasn't that much of a ditz, and then paid her two small compliments. But that was enough, in my mother's eyes, to put me squarely in the big pink camp. If I wasn't in total agreement with her, I might as well have been Heidi. There was no middle ground. Thinking this, I felt tears fill my eyes, just as I pulled open the door to Clementine's. Luckily, Esther and Leah were clustered at the counter with Maggie, all of them discussing their evening plans, as always. They barely paid me any attention as I walked past to the office, where I sat down at the desk, fully intending to get back to work. But after about 20 minutes of my numbers blurring as I wiped my eyes with the back of my hands, I decided to call it a night. Before I left the office, I pulled my hair back in a rubber band, then arranged my face to as stoic and unbothered an expression as I could manage. Two deep breaths, and then I was walking to the door. "The thing is," Leah was saying as I came onto the floor, "I'm never going to meet a hot guy at a coffee shop."
"Says who?" Esther asked.
"General logic. They just don't hang out there."
"What about the hot, sensitive, artistic type? They live at coffee shops."
"See, but," Leah said, "artistic isn't hot to me."
"Oh, right. You only like greased-up frat boys," Esther replied.
"Grease is your specialty, actually. It's the artistic types who don't bathe." I was hoping that this conversation was engrossing enough that they'd hardly notice me, but no luck. When they saw me coming, I had their full attention. "So, I've got to go," I said, keeping my voice casual. "The receipts are done, and I'll come in early to finish payroll tomorrow."
"Okay," Maggie said. "Hey, did you have fun with your..."
"You know," Esther said suddenly to Leah, "I kind of resent that remark. I have never dated anyone as greasy as that Air Force guy you met last summer."
"That wasn't grease," Leah said, picking up her phone and scanning the screen. "That was hair gel."
"I think it counts."
"It doesn't."
"You sure about that? Because..."
Thankfully, due to this, I was able to pretend I hadn't heard Maggie's half-question and slip out the door without further explanation. Not that she seemed to notice. When I glanced back, she was laughing at something Leah was saying, while Esther rolled her eyes, the three of them securely in their little pink world, as always. I hit Beach Beans, which was a few stores down, for a large coffee, then found a place on the sand and drank it while the sun set. After downing the last drop, I pulled out my phone and hit number one on my speed dial.
Dr. Victoria West.
Hi, Mom. It's me. There was a slight pause, then,
Auden, I thought I might hear from you.
Not a good start, but I pressed on anyway. I said, I wanted to see if you might want to have breakfast tomorrow morning. She sighed.
Oh, darling, I'd love to, but I'm heading back very early. I fear this trip was ill-advised, to be honest. I forgot how much I dislike the beach. Everything is just so...
I waited for the adjective that would fill this gap, knowing it probably was meant to describe me as well. But she let it trail off, sparing both the coast and myself.
Anyway, she said after a moment of too noticeable silence, it was lovely to see you. Do let me know how your summer progresses. I want to know everything.
It was not lost on me that this was exactly what she'd said to me the day I left. Then, though, we'd both known she meant the gory, mockable details of my dad and Heidi and their silly lives. The life that I, with one pink raincoat, was now living as well.
I'll do that, I said. Have a safe drive back.
I will. Goodbye, sweetheart.
I shut my phone, then just sat there, feeling that lump rise in my throat again. I'd always had to work so hard to keep my mother's interest, wresting it away from her work, her colleagues, her students, my brother. I'd often wondered if it was ridiculous to feel this way. Clearly, though, my instincts had been right. Her attention was not only hard to come by, but entirely too easy to lose. I sat there for a long time, watching as people walked up and down the beach in front of me. There were families, kids running ahead and dodging the waves, couples holding hands, groups of girls, groups of guys, surfers dotting the distant breakers, even a darkness began to fall. Eventually, though, the sand grew empty, as lights came on in the houses behind me and on the pier in the distance. The night was only just starting, and there was still so long to go until morning. The very thought made me tired. So tired.
Auden?
I jumped, then turned my head to see Maggie standing beside me. Her hair was blowing in the breeze, her bag over her shoulders. Behind her, the boardwalk was a row of lights, one right after the other.
You okay?
She said. When I didn't respond, she added,
You seemed kind of sad when you left.
I had a flash of my mother, the dismissive way she'd looked at Maggie, the bikini bottoms, the booty berry, and then me, all of us grouped in the category of not to her liking. But it was vast, that place I'd struggled to avoid for so long, as wide and long as the beach where we were right then. And now that I finally found myself squarely in it, I realized I was kind of glad to have company.
No, I said to her. I don't think I am, actually.
I wasn't sure what I expected her to do or say to this. It was all new to me, from that second on. But clearly, she'd been there before. It was obvious in the easy way she shrugged off her bag, letting it fall with a thump onto the sand
before sitting down beside me. She didn't pull me close for a big bonding hug, or offer up some saccharine words of comfort, both of which would have sent me running for sure. Instead, she gave me nothing but her company, realizing even before I did that this, in fact, was just what I needed. Chapter 8. "What I find," Maggie said, "is that when you get gum, you always need something else, because gum isn't really a snack."
"So true," Esther agreed.
"If I do get gum, I always grab some chips or maybe a cookie 2-pack as well. That way you know you've got your food and something refreshing for afterward."
Leah shook her head.
"I don't know," she said. "What about Tic Tacs? They're like gum, but I've been known to eat them for a meal before."
"Tic Tacs you actually swallow, though," Esther pointed out. "You own a Tic Tac. Gum is just borrowed." Maggie turned to her, smiling.
"Impressive."
"Thank you," Esther replied. "I always feel inspired here at the Gas Grow." I, however, was not feeling inspired or impressed. If anything, I felt completely out of my element, a stranger in a strange world. One minute I was alone on the beach, and the next I was here, a girl among girls, maybe even a store-goer. When Maggie had first sat down beside me, I had no idea what to expect. I had friends from the various schools I'd attended, but the one common denominator was that I'd never really done the girly thing with any of them. Our interactions, instead, were mostly limited to academic discussions, our solid common ground. So all I had to go on were the snippets of chick flicks I'd caught here and there on basic cable, where women only seemed to bond while drinking too much, playing disco music, dancing together, or all of the above. But since none of these things was going to happen on my watch, even in my depressed state, I had to wonder what exactly would. When Maggie finally spoke, though, she managed to surprise me. Again. "So, your mom's kind of a badass, huh?" I turned to look at her. She was staring out at the water, her hair blowing around her face, knees pulled to her chest. I said, "That's one word for her." She smiled, then reached over for her bag, plopping it between us, and then reaching a hand in to dig around for something. After a moment, she pulled a magazine out, and I braced myself for some celebrity analogy. God help me. Instead, I was shocked to see it was a college catalog from The U, as she pulled it into her lap, flipping through a few pages until she found one with the corner folded down. Then she handed it to me. "You, English, and you," it said. The words were somewhat hard to read, as I had only the distant glow of the house behind us to go on. But the picture of my mom, sitting at the head of the seminar table, her glasses in one hand, clearly mid-lecture, I would have known in any light, any distance. "Where did you get this?" I asked her. "It came with my application package. The English department was the main reason I applied there." "You're going to the U?" She shook her head, and I felt bad for asking, as a rejection had to be a sore subject. "I did tons of research, though. I knew your mom looked familiar in the store today, but I couldn't figure out why until I went home and found that." I looked down at my mom's picture again, then slowly shut the catalog. "She's complex," I said. "It's not always easy being her daughter." "I think," she said, "sometimes it's hard no matter whose daughter you are." I considered this as I handed the catalog back to her and she returned it to her bag. For a moment we just sat there, both of us quiet, looking at the water. All I could think was that, of everyone I'd met so far in Colby, She was the last person I ever would have thought I would end up with like this. Which reminded me of something else.
You know, I said finally, Jake really was nothing to me. I'm embarrassed I ever had anything to do with him.
She nodded slowly. He tends to have that effect on people.
Really, though, if I had it to do over, I took in a breath. I wouldn't.
And you, she said, stretching her legs out in front of her, were only with him for one night. Imagine wasting 2 years of your life like I did.
I couldn't, of course. I'd never even had a real boyfriend, even a crappy one.
I said, you must have really loved him.
I did. This was said simply, easily, the truth.
I guess everyone has that, though, right?
Has what?
That first love. And the first one who breaks your heart. For me, they just happen to be the same person. At least I'm efficient, right?
She reached into her bag, rummaging around again, before finally pulling out a pack of gum. She went to pull out a stick, then furrowed her brow.
Empty. Time to hit the gas, girl.
I looked up at her as she got to her feet, brushing sand off herself before grabbing her bag.
Well, I said, thanks for checking in on me.
You're not coming? She asked.
To the gas, girl?
Or wherever.
She hiked her bag over her shoulder.
I mean, you can just sit here, I guess, but it seems kind of lonely. Especially if you're already feeling rotten.
I just sat there, looking at her for a moment. I felt like I should be honest, let her know that lonely actually appealed to me, even at my most rotten, and at times was actually preferable. But then I remembered how I'd been feeling, sitting there watching the sun go down, and wondered if this was still true. Maybe. Maybe not. It seemed a lot to decide right at that moment, so instead I went with another truth, one that was never in doubt.
Well, I said, I guess I could use some more coffee.
Then somehow I was standing up, chucking my empty cup into a nearby trash can and falling into step beside her, down the sand to the boardwalk, past the gathered tourists, to the gas grow where Esther and Leah were sitting outside on the bumper of a beat-up Jetta. Waiting for us. Now, I watched as Maggie grabbed a pack of cookies and her gum and paused, her hand over the Twizzlers, before deciding against them. Esther, beside her, was studying a package of sunflower seeds.
All night I've been thinking about these, she said, but now, here in the moment, I'm just not sure they have enough snack bang.
Snack bang? I asked.
It's the amount of taste and sustenance you get from any given snack, Maggie explained, as Leah grabbed a box of Tic Tacs, shaking them. So, like, sunflower seeds have very little, but beef jerky has tons.
I said, you know, I have to be honest, I just don't get this.
Get what? Leah asked.
This whole obsession with stores and snacks and analyzing the minutia of every single choice and pairing, I said. What is that all about?
They all looked at one another. Then Esther said, I don't know. It's like we're headed out somewhere. You never know what's going to happen. So you stop for supplies.
The store going comes first, Maggie added, and then the adventure follows. They headed for the register, and I grabbed a fresh cup, filling it up with grow roast. It was simple. I required nothing else. But on my way to the register, I found myself suddenly reaching out to grab a pack of 2 chocolate cupcakes. I knew they were extraneous, highly caloric, a waste of money. and yet I had to wonder if they were right. When you don't know where you're going, maybe it wasn't such a bad thing to have more than you need.
Oh, God, Esther groaned. Like we haven't been here before.
We were standing in the driveway of a big house right on the beach. There were people packed on the front steps, moving in shadows across lit-up windows, filling both decks and scattered across the sand below. Plus, there still were cars arriving, parking behind those already lining the narrow road and cluttering the cul-de-sac. In the 2 minutes we'd been standing there, at least 15 people had walked past us, heading in.
And because we have been here before, Esther continued as a car drove by behind us, radio blaring, I vote that we leave now, while we still have our dignity.
I'm not planning to be undignified, Leah said, opening her Tic Tacs and popping one in her mouth. I just want to have a good time.
Same thing.
Oh, for God's sake, it's not, Leah said. Would you just relax for once? This might be fun.
This kind of party is never fun, Esther said. Unless you like having beer spilled on you or some meaty guy grab your ass in some crowded hallway, which apparently you do.
Leah sighed, blowing her hair out of her face. Look, last night I went to Club Caramel and sat there while that girl played the xylophone and sang 10 songs about communism. And did I complain?
Yes, Maggie and Esther said in unison.
Esther added, loudly.
But I went, Leah continued, ignoring this. And in return, I got to choose what we did tonight. And I pick this, so let's go in.
She didn't wait for agreement. Instead, just pocketing her Tic Tacs and starting toward the house with long, confident strides. Esther followed along behind her, decidedly less enthusiastic, while Maggie glanced at me.
It won't be that bad, she said. I mean, it's just your typical weekend house party, you know.
I didn't, though. I had no idea. Not that I was going to say so. I just followed Maggie up the driveway, taking care to step over the many beer cans that were littering the driveway and stairs. Inside the house, the hallway was crowded, people packed in on either side. The only way through was navigating a narrow passage, single file, and even then it was a tight squeeze. It smelled like cologne and sweat and beer, an odor that just grew more potent the farther we proceeded. I tried to look straight ahead, but occasionally out of the corner of my eye, I'd see a guy watching me, his brow damp with sweat, or hear a voice say something.
Hey, baby, how you doing?
Maybe meant for me, or anyone. We finally reached the living room, where there was a bit more breathing room and a lot more people. Music was blaring from a stereo I couldn't see, and there was a group of people dancing off to one side, mostly girls, while a bunch of guys looked on. In the kitchen, directly to my right, I could see a keg, as well as a bunch of various liquor bottles cluttering the counter by the sink. There was also, inexplicably, 2 trays of pastries. One of beautiful cupcakes, clearly hand-iced, each dotted with roses, and another of various bars, lemon, chocolate chip, raspberry, carefully arranged on tiny paper doilies. Maggie, seeing me notice this, motioned for me to lean closer to her. Then she said, right in my ear,
Belissa's parents own Sweet Petite Bakery. This is her house.
She nodded toward a girl with long, dark hair, streaked with blonde, wearing a white tank top and jeans, who was dancing with the group in the living room. She had her head thrown back, laughing, and her lipstick was bright, bright red, the same color as the tiny roses on each of the cupcakes.
We need beer, Leah announced from Maggie's other side.
She grabbed a couple of red cups from somewhere, then handed them to me. Here, you're closest. I looked down at the cups, then at the keg beside me. Leah and Maggie were now talking about something. Esther had vanished, so neither of them noticed me hesitate before turning to face the keg, where I assumed I was supposed to get the beer. It seemed simple enough, so I picked up the spigot attached to it and turned the top. Nothing happened. I glanced around me. Leah and Maggie were still talking, and the only other people nearby, a couple making out against the fridge, weren't paying me, or anything else, any attention. I twisted the top again. Nothing. And felt my face flush, embarrassed. I had never been good at asking for help with anything, especially something that people assumed you already knew. And I knew plenty, but this simple, stupid thing was all new to me. I took a breath, about to try again, when suddenly a hand appeared over mine. The fingers pressing down on the spigot, and beer began to fill the cup I was holding. "Let me guess," Eli said, his voice that low, even timbre, as always. "Drinking from kegs also falls under outdoor activity." I just looked at him, standing there in jeans, and the same blue hoodie he'd had on the first time I met him. Maybe it was the embarrassment, which had been bad enough before I had an audience, but I was instantly annoyed. I said, "Are we outside?" He glanced around as if needing to confirm this. "Nope." "Then no." I turned my attention back to the keg. He removed his hand from the spigot, then stood there watching me as I filled another cup. "You know," he said, "I've noticed you're kind of defensive." "And I replied, "have noticed that you are very judgmental." "Oh," he said, "so you're still upset about the bike thing." "I know how to ride a bike," I said. "But not how to work a keg." I sighed. "And you care about this because..." He shrugged. "It's kind of required here, like buying more than one thing at the gas grow." I was kind of impressed he remembered me saying this from the jump park. It was nice to be memorable, even in a somewhat embarrassing way. But I ignored him, instead moving to get Maggie's and Leah's attention so I could give them their beers. When I turned to them, though, they both were staring at me, their eyes wide. "What?" I said. But they just took the cups, then stepped a bit farther away from me, exchanging a look as they each took a sip. I moved back to the keg with the last cup, reaching to fill it. Once I had, they were still watching me with these weird expressions, so I just took a sip from my cup instead. The beer was warm and flat. Clearly, I had not been missing much. Beside me, Eli was now studying the pastries, and I realized that maybe I had been a little short with him. In an attempt to be conciliatory, I said, "Apparently the people who own this house have a bakery, or something." He glanced at me. "Really?" I took another sip, why I had no idea, as it tasted terrible. "She's the girl in the white shirt over there, with the red lipstick." He glanced in the direction I indicated, watching the people dancing for a moment. "Oh, right. I see her." The girl was really moving now, her hair swishing down her back from side to side as she moved her hips in a circle. A pumped-up guy with, yes, hair gel, pressing up behind her. "Wow," I said. "That's really something." "Meaning what?" I shrugged. The girl glanced over at us, her eyes meeting mine, and I took another sip of my beer. "Just sometimes less is more, you know?" He sort of smiled, as if this was cute, which was kind of annoying. I glanced over at Maggie and Leah, who for some reason were now looking at me totally goggle-eyed. "Which is not to say," I said to Eli, "you shouldn't have one of her cupcakes. They look great."
"Nah," he said. "I'll pass."
"You know," I told him, "if you don't know how to eat a cupcake, that's nothing to be ashamed of."
Now he did smile. "I know how to eat a cupcake."
"Sure you do."
"I do," he said. "I just don't want one of those."
"Yeah?" I put my cup down, then reached into my bag for the packaged ones I'd bought at the gas grow, pulling them out and placing them on the counter between us. "Prove it."
"You really want me to?" he asked.
"It's kind of required here," I said, "like riding a bike." He studied my face for a second, then picked up the pack of cupcakes, opening it and pulling one out. I was watching him, about to take another sip of beer, when I felt a hand suddenly clench my arm.
"Abort," Maggie hissed in my ear. "Abort! Abort right now!"
"What?" I said, but I barely got the word out before she was yanking me sideways past Eli, who was chewing, watching us, and out onto the back deck, where Leah was clearing a path through the people there.
"Hurry!" she yelled over her shoulder, and Maggie nodded, still dragging me behind her. "I think if we go down the stairs this way, we can get out faster and maybe avoid this."
"Right," Maggie replied. "Let's definitely avoid this."
"What are you guys talking about?" I asked as Maggie dragged me down a short flight of stairs to a lower deck, which was a bit less crowded.
"Avoid what?"
She turned as if to answer me, but didn't get the chance, because right then a glass door to our right slid open, and the girl from the dance floor, Miss Red Lipstick Cupcake, less is not more, appeared, planting herself squarely in our path. Two of the girls she'd been dancing with, a redhead in a black dress and a shorter, pudgy blonde girl, spilled out behind her.
"Okay," she said, holding up both hands, palms facing us. Her voice was kind of nasal, thin. "What just happened in there? And who the hell is this?"
She was looking right at me, as were both her friends, and I felt myself break into a cold sweat instantly, something that I'd read about but never actually experienced before in my entire life. Maggie, releasing her hold on my arm, said,
"Belissa, it's really nothing."
"Nothing?" Belissa took a step toward me. Up close, I could see the bumpy texture of her skin, how her nose was a little pointier than she probably liked.
"What's your name, skank?"
At first, I thought this was both a question, "What's your name?" and an answer. Then I realized she was actually waiting for a response.
"Auden," I said.
Her eyes narrowed.
"Auden," she repeated. "The way you'd say scrotum or excrement." "What kind of name is that?"
"Well," I said. "It doesn't matter," Leah said, cutting me off. "Like Maggie said, nothing happened."
"Was she or was she not in there hitting on Eli?" Belissa demanded.
"She wasn't," Leah said, her voice flat, certain. The blonde and the redhead exchanged looks. "She's not from here. She doesn't know anybody."
"Or anything," Maggie added, sounding less confident.
Belissa glanced at her.
"Oh, you know what I mean."
"I saw how he was talking to her," Belissa said. It was weird how she was staring at me, and yet at the same time ignoring me completely.
"He was smiling, for God's sake."
"He's not allowed to smile?" Leah asked. Maggie shot her a look, and she added,
Look, Belissa, it was an honest mistake and we're leaving, okay? Belissa considered this, then stepped even closer to me.
I don't know who you are, she said, punctuating this with a jab of her finger, the tip touching my chest. And I don't really care, but you better stay away from my boyfriend, especially when you're under my roof. Understood?
I looked past her to Maggie, who nodded, her head bobbing wildly. I said,
All right. All right, Belissa repeated.
Behind her, Leah sighed, looking up at the sky.
Now get off my property.
And with that, Maggie was yanking my arm again, dragging me down the nearby stairs. She continued her death grip on me as we followed Leah down to the beach, around a dune, and then over a public walkway, back to the street, not letting go until we were back at the car, where Esther was waiting.
Where the hell have you been? Leah demanded. We could have used you back there.
Let me guess, Esther said as Maggie and I got in the back seat. Something undignified happened.
If you call Auden just about getting all our asses kicked undignified, then yes, Leah told her.
She slammed her door shut, then turned around in her seat to look at me.
Are you crazy? Flirting with Eli Stock in front of Belissa Norwood in Belissa Norwood's house while eating Belissa Norwood's cupcakes?
They were all looking at me now. I said, We weren't eating those cupcakes.
Leah threw her hands up, turning back around as Esther cranked the engine. Maggie, beside me, said,
You guys, she didn't know about any of that.
She didn't know about you and Jake either, Leah said, but that didn't stop you from wanting to flatten her when she hooked up with him.
True, Maggie said.
But like Belissa, I was in the wrong. She and Eli are broken up. He can talk to whoever he wants.
But that's just the point, Leah told her, turning to face me. Eli doesn't talk to anyone, ever. So why is he talking to her? No one said anything. Finally, I cleared my throat and said, Well, I don't know. He just does, ever since this one night when I saw him riding his bike.
Silence.
They were all staring at me, even Esther, who used the rear view. Maggie said softly, You saw Eli on a bike? What was he doing?
I shrugged. I don't know. Tricks? He was jumping around at the end of the boardwalk.
Maggie and Leah looked at each other.
You know, Leah said, I think maybe...
Agreed, Esther said, hitting her turn signal as the gas grow came up in the distance. We definitely need some snack bang for this one.
The thing is, Maggie began, if we're going to tell you about Eli, first we have to tell you about Abe. We were at the very tip of the pier, lined up on a bench and looking out over the water. On the way out to the end, we'd passed several fishermen standing with their rods leaning over the side, focused on the water. Here we were all alone, except for the wind and the splashing below.
Abe and Eli, Maggie said, were inseparable. Best friends since, like, kindergarten. You hardly ever saw them apart.
But they were totally different, Esther added. You know, Eli's got that dark, quiet thing going on, and Abe was...
They were all quiet for a moment. Then Leah said,
A total goofball.
Total, Maggie agreed. Like the silliest person you ever met. He could make anybody laugh.
Even Eli?
Especially Eli, Leah smiled.
God, do you remember what Eli was like before Abe died? He was actually funny.
Abe died? I said. Maggie nodded solemnly, opening up a pack of gum.
It was May of last year. He and Eli were down in Brockton at this event at Concrete Jungle. They were both sponsored, had been for a couple of years now. They both started out straight BMX, you know, but then Eli took up the half pipe and Abe stuck more to flatland, at least in competition. But they were both really good at urban, although that's not surprising considering where we're from. I just looked at her. Leah said, Maggie, nobody here but you understands all that bike shit. Speak English.
Oh, sorry. Maggie pulled out a piece of gum, popping it in her mouth. Eli and Abe were both really, really good at riding bikes. So good they got paid to go around and compete at various events, and that's why they were in Brockton.
And it was after the event, Esther said, when they were driving back from a party that the accident happened.
The accident? I said. Leah nodded. Eli was driving, and Abe was killed. I heard myself gasp. Oh my God.
I know. Maggie folded the gum wrapper she was holding, first once, then twice, down to a tiny square.
I was with Jake when Eli called. We were at his house, and I could hear Eli on the phone. He was at the hospital, and he was trying to talk, but all I could hear was this awful sound he was making.
She didn't finish. Instead, just looked out over the water, dark on either side of us. Esther said,
It wasn't his fault. They were going through a four-way stop, and someone just ran it and hit them.
A drunk, Leah added. Esther nodded.
It tore Eli up big time. It was like Abe took some part of him when he went, you know? He's never been the same.
He gave up all his sponsorships, the riding, everything, Maggie said. He'd gotten into college at the U and deferred to keep competing, but he didn't go there either. He just got a job managing the bike shop and stopped riding altogether.
Leah glanced at me. Or so we thought.
I just saw him doing it that one night on the boardwalk, I told her. It was really late. Or early, actually.
Well, Maggie said, I guess that means something.
What, I don't know, but something. There was a sudden burst of noise from behind us. When I turned, I saw one of the fishermen pulling something over the rail of the pier. It was flopping, catching the light here and there, before he eased it down behind a tackle box, out of sight. The other people fishing took note, then returned to their own lines.
And Belissa? I said, warming my hands around my cup. What's the story there?
They'd dated since sophomore year, Leah told me. She stuck with him through the funeral and a couple of months after, but eventually things just fell apart. She dumped him, is what I heard, although apparently she sees it differently.
Apparently, I said.
Leah smiled, shaking her head.
I swear. When she asked you what kind of name that was and you were about to answer her, I almost just took off running and left you there to fend for yourself.
She asked me a question, I said. She didn't want an answer, though.
Well, then why did she ask?
Because, Leah said, she was gearing up to smacking your face.
God, don't you know anything about dealing with jealous ex-girlfriends?
No, I said. Not really.
Maggie smiled. Well, you just got a crash course, then.
Crash being the operative word, Leah added. I mean, did you see how pissed off she was?
And then she tells you to get lost or else, and you say, "All right," Maggie said. Esther's eyes widened.
"No."
She totally did, and said it just like that, too, like she was doing her a favor by agreeing. "I did not," I said. Leah and Maggie just looked at me.
"Did I?"
"Yep." Leah shook her cup, then took another sip off her straw, which was either incredibly ballsy or incredibly stupid. I'm still not sure which. Esther laughed, and I just sat there, looking down at my coffee and remembering how completely out of my element I'd been at the party, and that moment. Never before had it been so obvious that although I'd spent my entire life learning, there was a lot of stuff I still didn't know. Enough to get me into big trouble, apparently, if someone hadn't been there to help me out. "It was stupid," I said out loud, thinking this. They all looked at me. I mean, what I said. The truth is, I didn't have much of a social life in high school. Or ever, for that matter. This was greeted with an extended silence. Or maybe it just felt that way to me.
"You know," Leah said, "that actually explains a lot."
"It does," Maggie agreed. "What's that supposed to mean?" I asked.
"Nothing," she said quickly, then glancing at Leah, she added, "I mean, just how you came to town and hooked up with Jake right away and then were surprised when people, drew conclusions about you."
"And by people," Leah said, "she means us."
"Cut that," I replied. "Thanks."
"Plus," Esther added, "there's the way you've always kept to yourself."
"Except for tonight," Leah pointed out.
"Except for tonight," Maggie agreed. "I mean, we just figured you thought you were better than us. But maybe you just didn't know how to hang out." I wanted to believe it was the latter, but I knew in my heart of hearts, my truest place, that I had assumed my superiority. In Maggie's case, with a single glance.
"Like I said," Leah said, "only a girl who didn't have any real girlfriends would actually begin to answer the question, what kind of a name is that?"
"I thought she wanted to know," I said. "I doubt Melissa Norwood has much interest in learning about the life of a modern poet famous for his works on politics, nature, and unrequited love," Maggie said. I turned, facing her.
"You know about Auden?"
"I wrote my senior thesis on the use of loss in his poems," she replied. "It's what got me into DeFries. Hey, Leah, you have any Tic Tacs left?"
I just sat there, stunned into silence, as Leah pulled out the pack, passing it to her. I'd had a lot of surprises that day, my mom showing up, almost getting my butt kicked, and learning about Eli's past. But this was the thing that left me speechless. Maggie was going to DeFries, just like me.
"Shoot," Esther said, glancing at her watch. "It's past midnight. I better get home. Who needs a ride?"
"I guess I do," Leah said, standing up and wiping off her jeans with her hands. "Considering I didn't get to meet some hot guy to drive me home from that party."
"Sorry," I said.
"Oh, she'll survive," Esther said, sliding her arm around Leah's shoulders as we started back down the pier.
"Tomorrow night we'll go to Bentley's for open mic, and maybe you can find yourself a nice, greasy artist type there."
"Maybe I will," Leah replied. "Just to spite you."
"What about you, Auden?" Maggie asked, falling into step beside me. You want to ride back to Heidi's? I looked down the pier to the boardwalk and the road beyond it, the street lights breaking up the dark. Nah, I said. I think I'll grab some more coffee before I head home.
More coffee? Esther said, eyeing my cup. Doesn't that keep you up, though?
I shook my head. Nope, it doesn't. At the end of the pier, we said our goodbyes, and they headed back to the car. I could hear them still talking, their voices carried by the wind. As I turned and started in the other direction, back to the gas grow, where I was the only customer, as I filled up a fresh cup, adding milk, a stirrer, and, after a moment of consideration, a candy bar. The cashier, an older woman with blonde hair and a name tag that said Wanda, was working on a crossword. She put it down, then rang me up, while stifling a yawn.
Late night, she said as I slid my money across to her.
Aren't they all? I replied. Out in the parking lot, the wind was warm and blowing hard, and for a moment I just closed my eyes and stood there, feeling it on my face. Earlier that night, I'd taken off to be alone, only to find, to my surprise, that company was just what I needed. Still, I knew it must have been hard for Maggie to come looking for me, not knowing how I'd react when I saw her. The easiest thing would have been to just leave me alone. But she didn't go for the easiest thing. I was a girl who liked a challenge, too. Or at least I liked to think of myself that way. So, I went looking for Eli. On the way to the boardwalk, I passed a cop, driving slowly, his radio crackling. Two girls, arm in arm, one stumbling, the other pulling her forward. The bars still had an hour or so left until closing, with people and music spilling out their open doors. Farther down into the business district, though, all the stores were dark. But in the bike shop, way in the back, a light was on. I raised my hand to knock, then dropped it, reconsidering. So I'd spent a night in the world of girls. Big deal. Did it really mean anything had changed? Especially me? As I stood there debating this, I saw someone move across the lit, open back door of the shop. Dark hair, blue shirt. Before I knew what I was doing, my hand was wrapping the glass. Hard. Eli looked up, his face wary. When he came closer and saw it was me, he didn't really look relieved. Or surprised, actually. He unlocked the door, pushing it open. Let me guess, he said. You want to learn to ride a bike, and it can't wait until morning. No, I said. He dropped his hand from the door and just stood there, looking at me. I realized he was waiting for me to explain myself. I was in the neighborhood. Saw the light. I held up my coffee as if this proved something. Long night and all that. He studied my face for a moment.
Right, he said finally. Well, come on in.
I stepped through the door and he shut it, locking it behind me. I followed him through the dark shop to the back, which was some kind of repair area. There were parts of bikes up on stands, wheels leaning against workbenches, a pile of gears on a table, tools everywhere. In one corner, where a bike was partially assembled, a handwritten sign said, Adam's Workspace, Touch and Die, with a skull and crossbones underneath it.
Have a seat, Eli said, waving a hand at a stool right beside this. Seems dangerous.
He glanced at the sign, then rolled his eyes.
It's not.
I sat down, my cup in hand, as he slid behind a nearby cluttered desk, which was piled with papers, various bike parts, and, not surprisingly, a collection of empty soda bottles and various convenience store items.
So,
he said, picking up an envelope and glancing at it. You say you're not here for a bike?
No, I said.
Then what? You're just out walking the boardwalk in the middle of the night?
Eli doesn't talk, Leah had said. To anyone. Ever. But he had to me. And maybe that did mean something, even if it wasn't clear just what.
I don't know, I said. I thought you might want to talk or something.
Eli shut the drawer, slowly, and looked at me. The click noise it made seemed very loud.
Talk, he said, his voice flat.
Yeah. He was just sitting there, staring at me, expressionless. And I felt not unlike when my mom got me in her sights, a serious squirm coming on.
You're up. I'm up. I just figured...
Oh, I get it, he said, nodding.
Right. You know now.
No, I said. He shook his head.
I should have known when I saw you at the door, not to mention at the party. Maggie isn't exactly known for holding back information.
I just sat there, not sure what to do. I said, look, I'm sorry, I just thought...
I know what you thought. He picked up a stack of papers, rifling through it. And I appreciate you wanting to help me or whatever, but I don't need it, okay?
I nodded numbly. Suddenly the room seemed too bright, illuminating every single one of my failings. I slid off the stool.
I should go, I said. It's late.
Eli looked over at me. I remembered how that first night I'd thought of him as haunted, before I even knew this was true.
He said, do you want to know why I talked to you?
Yeah, I said, I do.
Because, he said, from that first day on the boardwalk you were different. You never tiptoed around me or acted all weird or sorry for me or gave me that look.
What look?
That one, he said, pointing at my face. I felt myself blush. You were just normal. Until tonight.
Until tonight, I thought, hearing Maggie and Esther saying these same words only an hour earlier. Eli was still rummaging around in the drawer, his head ducked, and I thought of him that day on the pier with Thisbe, how easily he'd reached down to pick her up. There are a lot of ways to comfort someone. The elevator was only one of the unexpected ones.
You know, I said, leaning against the door jamb, I'm actually relieved to hear you say that. Because I don't want to feel sorry for you.
You don't?
He said, not looking up.
Nope. The truth is, I'm actually kind of angry with you.
Angry? I nodded. He lifted his head. Now I had his attention.
And why is that?
Because you almost got my ass kicked tonight.
I did.
I rolled my eyes.
Like you didn't know that was your girlfriend I was talking about, I told him. Not to mention looking at while I was talking about.
Hold on, he said. You just let me stand there and shoot off my mouth, I continued, ignoring this. And then when she came after me...
She came after you?
She poked me in the chest and called me a skank. I said. He raised his eyebrows. And meanwhile, you're off eating cupcakes somewhere.
Excuse me, he said, pushing the drawer shut.
But you were the one who told me to eat the cupcakes. When I didn't know my life was in danger, I sighed. All I'm saying is that you kind of left me out there to fend for myself, which wasn't very cool.
Look, he said, Belissa is not my girlfriend.
You might want to tell her that, I replied. If you can, you know, make time during all that cupcake eating.
Eli was just looking at me, his expression hard to read, and again I felt like squirming, but not for the same reasons. At all.
What are you really doing out so late? He asked.
I don't sleep at night.
Why not?
It used to be because my parents were up fighting, I said. But now, I don't know. This answer was like a reflex, coming without thinking. Eli nodded, then said,
What do you do to pass the time, other than not riding bikes?
I shrugged. Read, drive. At home I have a 24-hour diner I really like, but here there's only the Wheelhouse, which is less than ideal.
You've been going to the Wheelhouse? He shook his head. The coffee there is terrible.
I know. Plus the waitresses are mean.
And it's not like you're taking up a table someone else wants, he sighed. You should be going where I go. Open 24/7, great coffee, and pie.
Really? I said. That's the trifecta.
I know.
Wait, though, I said. I have Googled every single restaurant for 50 miles, and nothing came up but the Wheelhouse.
That, he said, is because my place is a local secret.
Oh, right. I leaned back against the door jamb.
Of course. The local thing again.
Yep. He said, reaching down to grab a canvas bag from beside the desk and hoisting it over his shoulder.
But don't worry. I think I can get you in.
This, I said, is not a restaurant. That much was obvious by the row of coin-operated washing machines on one side of the room, the dryers on the other, not to mention the tables lined up for folding in between, a few plastic chairs, and a machine dispensing small boxes of detergent and fabric softener with an out-of-order sign taped over it.
I didn't say it was a restaurant, Eli said as he walked over to a machine, plopping his canvas bag down on top of it.
Well, you didn't say it was a laundromat, I pointed out.
True.
He pulled a bottle of Tide out of the bag, then dumped the bag's contents inside. After he fed in some quarters and water began to slosh across the glass front, sudsing immediately, he said,
Follow me.
I did, albeit hesitantly, down the row of washers and dryers to a narrow hallway, which ended with a plain white door. He knocked twice, then pulled it open, gesturing for me to go through first. Initially, I hesitated, but then, sure enough, I smelled coffee. And that was enough to push me over the threshold, which honestly was like stepping into a different world. Gone was the linoleum and shiny appliances. This place was dim, the walls painted a deep purple. There was one window, a string of multicolored lights tacked up over it, and a few small tables. Right by the back door, which was open, a warm breeze blowing through, was a small counter. An older guy with black hair streaked with white was sitting behind it, reading a magazine. When he looked up and saw Eli, he smiled.
Yo, he called out. I thought you might turn up tonight.
I was running out of shirts, Eli replied.
Well then, the guy put his magazine aside, then stood up, rubbing his hands together.
What can I get for you?
That depends, Eli said, walking over to the counter and pulling out a stool. I was about to do the same when he gestured at it, and I realized it was for me. What's on the menu?
Well, the guy said, stepping back from the counter and looking beneath it. Let's see. There's some rhubarb, apple, and some razzleberry.
Razzleberry?
The guy nodded. Raspberry and blueberry. Sort of tart, sort of mellow. It's a little intense, but worth trying.
Sounds good. Eli glanced at me. What do you want?
Coffee, I said.
Just coffee?
The guy asked.
She's not from here, Eli explained. To me, he said, trust me, you want pie.
Oh. They were both looking at me. I said, apple, then.
Good choice, Eli said, as the guy turned around, grabbing two mugs from a rack behind him and filling them from a nearby coffee pot. Then, as we watched, he pulled two plates out from under the counter, followed by two pies. He cut hefty slices of each, arranged them neatly with a fork beside, and then pushed them over to us. I picked up my mug first, taking a tiny sip. Eli hadn't been joking after all. The coffee was incredible. But not as good as the pie. Sweet Jesus.
I told you, Eli said. Beats the wheelhouse by a mile.
The wheelhouse? Who's eating there?
The guy said. Eli nodded at me.
Oh, man, I hate to hear that.
Clyde, Eli said to me, is a man who takes pie very seriously.
Well, Clyde said, flattered. I mean, I endeavor to. But I'm only a beginner at this whole baking thing. I got a late start.
Clyde owns the bike shop, Eli told me, and this laundromat, and about four other businesses here in Colby. He's a mogul.
I prefer the term Renaissance man, Clyde said, as he picked up his magazine again, which I saw now was a copy of Gourmet. And just because I'm good at business doesn't mean I can do a perfect pie crust. Or so I'm learning.
I took another bite of the pie, which tasted pretty close to perfect to me, actually, and looked around the room again.
You have to admit, Eli said, as Clyde flipped a page, studying a recipe for potatoes au gratin. This is better than driving or reading.
Much. I agreed.
She doesn't sleep either, Eli told Clyde, who nodded. To me, he said, Clyde bought this place just so he'd have something to do at night.
Yep, Clyde said. The coffee shop part, though, that was Eli's idea.
Nah, Eli said, shaking his head.
It was.
Clyde turned another page.
Used to be. We just hang out during the spin cycle, share a thermos and whatever pastry I was working on. Then he convinced me maybe we weren't the only ones looking for a place to go other than a bar late at night.
Eli poked his fork into his pie crust.
Spin cycle, he said. That's not a bad one, actually.
Huh.
Clyde considered this.
You're right. Write it down.
Eli pulled out his wallet, then took out a piece of yellow folded paper. From the looks of it, it was a list, and a long one. Clyde handed him a pen, and I watched as he added spin cycle to the bottom.
We need a new name for the bike shop, Clyde explained to me. We've been trying to come up with one for ages.
I had a flash of my first day in Colby. The conversation I'd heard among Jake, Wallace, and Adam as I passed them on the boardwalk.
What's it called now?
The bike shop, Eli said, his voice flat.
I raised my eyebrows. Nice, right? Actually, it's called Clyde's Rides, Clyde said, picking up my coffee mug to refill it. But the sign got blown off during Hurricane Beatrice last year, and when I went to replace it, I thought maybe it was time to give it a new name.
Which we've been trying to do ever since, Eli said. Clyde can't make up his mind.
I'll know it when I hear it, Clyde said, hardly bothered. Until then, it's fine if everyone calls it the bike shop, because that's what it is, right?
A phone rang behind him, then, and he turned to grab it. As he stepped outside, the receiver pressed to his ear, Eli turned to look at me.
What did I tell you? He said. Pretty good, huh?
It is, I agreed. And you're right. I never would have found this place in a million years.
Nope, he said.
We sat there for a minute, eating. On the other side of the wall, I could hear a load bumping through a drying cycle. Thump, thump, thump. My watch said 2:15.
So, I said, what else you got?
I thought I was pretty good at both staying up and staying productive, but Eli was the master. After the laundromat, we got back into his car, an old Toyota truck with a cab on it, the back of which was filled with bike parts that clanked and rattled with every turn, then headed 15 miles west to the 24-hour Park Mart. There you could, at 3 a.m., not only buy groceries, linens, and small appliances, but also get your tires rotated, if you so desired. As we walked the aisles, a cart between us, we talked. Not about Abe, but about almost everything else.
So, DeFreeze, he said as he compared brands of microwave popcorn. Isn't that where Maggie's going?
I think so, I said as he pulled down a box, examining it.
Must be a really good school, then. That girl's brilliant.
I didn't say anything, and a moment later he added,
so I guess that makes you brilliant too, huh?
Yep, I said, pretty much. He raised an eyebrow at me, sticking the popcorn in our cart.
If you're such a brain, though, he said, how come you didn't know not to flirt with another girl's boyfriend in her own kitchen?
I'm book smart, I said, not street smart. Eli made a face.
I wouldn't exactly call Belissa street. She gets her jeans dry cleaned.
Really? He nodded. Wow.
I know.
We walked down the aisle a bit. He didn't seem to have a list, and yet still knew exactly what he wanted. Seriously, though, I said, you're right. I was kind of... I trailed off, and he didn't jump in, pushing me to finish. I was finding that I liked that. I guess, I said, that I just missed a lot in high school, like, socially.
I doubt it, he replied, stopping to throw a roll of paper towels in the cart. A lot of that stuff is overrated.
You can say that because you are popular, though. He glanced at me as we turned the corner to the soup aisle. Halfway down, a guy in a long coat was muttering to himself. That was one thing about being out so late, or early. The crazies were, too. Watching Eli, I saw he had the same attitude about it that I did, which was three-pronged. Don't stare, keep a wide berth, and act normal.
What makes you think I was popular?
Oh, come on, I said. You were a bike pro. You had to be.
For all you know, he replied, I was a nerdy bike pro.
I just looked at him.
Okay, fine. I wasn't exactly a wallflower.
He grabbed a can of tomato rice soup off the shelf, then another.
But big deal. It's not like it makes a difference in the long run.
I think maybe it does.
I leaned over the cart, looking down into it. I mean, I did all the academic stuff, but I never had that many friends, so there's a lot I don't know.
Like
not to talk to a girl's boyfriend in her own kitchen. We moved out of the aisle, away from the guy in the coat who was still muttering, and headed to the dairy section, passing a sleepy-looking employee restocking cold cuts along the way.
Well, he said, nothing like almost getting your ass kicked to hammer a lesson home. You're not likely to forget it now.
Yeah, I said, but what about everything else?
Such as...
I shrugged, leaning over the cart as he pulled out some milk, checking the expiration date. Watching him, I thought, not for the first time that night, that maybe it should have felt strange to be with him, here, now. And yet it didn't. At all. That was one of the things about the night. Stuff that would be weird in the bright light of day just wasn't so much once you passed a certain hour. It was like the dark just evened it all out somehow. I said, I just think that it's too late, maybe. All the things I should have been doing over the last 18 years, like going to slumber parties or breaking curfew on Friday night or
riding a bike,
he said. I stopped pushing the cart. What is it? I said, with you and the whole bike thing.
Well, I am in the business. Plus, it's a big part of growing up,
he replied, moving down to the cheese display.
And it's not too late.
I didn't say anything as we headed toward the registers, where one girl was standing by the only one that was open, examining her split ends.
Of course,
Eli said as he began unloading the cart onto the belt.
It's not too late for slumber parties or any of that other stuff either.
But breaking curfew, I think you can go ahead and knock off your list.
Why?
Because it's past 4 a.m. and you're at the Park Mart, he said as the girl began to scan the groceries.
It counts, I think.
I considered this as I watched some apples roll down the belt.
I don't know, I said. Maybe you're right, and all that stuff I think I missed is overrated. Why should I even bother? What's the point, really?
He thought for a moment.
Who says there has to be a point?
He asked.
Or a reason. Maybe it's just something you have to do.
He moved down to start bagging while I just stood there, letting this sink in.
Just something you have to do.
No excuse or rationale necessary. I kind of like that. From Park Mart, we headed over to Lumber and Stone, the home improvement superstore, which Eli informed me opened early for contractors. Which we were not, but they didn't seem to care, letting us walk right in. I tagged along as Eli stocked up on a new wrench set, a box of nails, and a value pack of light bulbs. While he checked out, I sat on a bench by the front door, watching the sun begin to rise over the parking lot. By the time we left, it was almost 6, and the rest of the world was finally waking up to join us.
I saw that,
he said as I stifled a yawn while sliding into the front seat of his car.
This, I said, is about the time I usually crash.
One last stop, he replied. It was, of course, the gas grow, where the same older woman, now reading the newspaper, was behind the counter, a cell phone pressed to her ear.
You need anything?
Eli asked, and I shook my head, sliding down in the seat a bit as he got out and went in. Just as he walked up to the door, a little blue Honda pulled in.